The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Honey, the online shopping platform that helps consumers save time and money, is building a Boulder office and looking for software engineers to join the team. Find out more at joinhoney.com/careers. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. We have a unique startup and tech community here on the edge of the Rockies, and we want you to know about it. The Boulder Tech Podcast features conversations with leaders, thinkers, and influencers, sharing their views on what's happening in Boulder's rapidly evolving tech scene. These interviews were recorded during the 9th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind, anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. Our guest for episode number 10 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is Boulder native Achilles Legrave, founder and CEO of BrandZuka, the world's fastest growing media platform. We get his thoughts on many topics, including the democratization of advertising and why it's going to make for a better online experience for all of us, the cultural dynamics of Boulder and its impact on the tech and startup community here, how that community maintains its uniqueness, and why an advertising guy loves ad blockers. What's your role at BrandZuka?
Aggressive and brown guy. But I guess if I had a non-hippie title, it would be a product owner.
And what does BrandZuka do?
BrandZuka is the fastest growing media platform worldwide. It allows anyone for a few bucks to put any video they want on primetime TV.
On primetime TV.
On primetime TV. So say you wanted to, you had a 15-second video about yourself saying, hey guys, I'm awesome. And you wanted to put that on Monday Night Football. You could do that for about 30 bucks.
How does that work?
Oh, now you're asking me to take the magic out of the box. And magic is never nearly as cool when you unpack.
Well, let me put that another way. So much.
How is that not bullshit?
How is that not bullshit? There you go.
Well, the reality is that we're seeing probably the largest migration of media in history as linear TV is transitioning to connected TV. So linear TV is TV as we know it through a cable. It's pretty analog technology. Now, you think about the way you're absorbing media these days. It's through platforms like Sling, through boxes like Roku, Fire Stick, what have you. In fact, 60 million U.S. households now have connected TV devices, and the average amount of TV devices is 2. And I'm already kind of boring myself. But the whole point is once you merge your TV with digital, what the backload of that is able to do in terms of targeting is very similar to Facebook. So think Facebook ads for TV.
Okay. Where will I see my really awesome 15-second ad about me on Monday Night Football, or actually, let's say hockey,
right.
Hockey
so it's the targeting of digital with a format of TV. So if you say, hey, I want to target, let's say me, I want to target 30-something-year-old brown dudes who work in tech in downtown Boulder and are watching Fox Sports or watching ESPN, etc., then BrandZuka is able to connect through to Amazon and Apple, etc., and actually insert that video as an ad, as you would see on Hulu, targeting those people. It's one of those batshit crazy ideas that feels absolutely crazy that people are still wrapping their brains about. You know, the company's founder, Alex Bogusky, likes to say, I know how it works, but I still don't fucking believe it, mm-hmm. You know? The cool thing is, since we launched BrandZuka, we've scaled to over 25,000 advertisers worldwide. And those folks include everyone from 12-year-olds on YouTube. One of the coolest things for us is going on YouTube and you type in BrandZuka and you see countless videos of like 8 to 12 year olds talking about how you should spend your allowance money on Brinsuka because it's such a great way for a young YouTuber to get massive exposure. So you have those guys on one end, and on the other side, we do a lot of work with global brands like both Nike and Adidas are Brinsuka clients, as is Audi and Apple and Microsoft.
Clearly, the money mostly comes from them. But how many of your users are
actually? You'd
average?
Be surprised. One of the coolest things about Brinsuka, and we're just on fire. So it's been a lot of fun. One of the funnest things about Brinsuka is, regardless of the fact that we work with these giant agencies and giant brands, 2/3 of our revenue is still generated from the small brands. And there's no two Brinsukas, right? There's not a Brinsuka for small brands and a Brinsuka for Nike. It doesn't work differently for Nike than it works for a coffee shop in Illinois. It's the same exact platform for everybody. So we think that's pretty awesome.
How long has the company been around?
Oh man, we just turned 3. So, and when I say 3, I mean 3. We started out with Alex handing us a back of a napkin sketch that basically looked like happy face, arrow, cloud, down arrow, money, and said, go build that. So we really started kind of as a research project, not knowing if it was even feasible or possible. And it just took off from there.
So Alex Boguski, of course, one of the founders of Crispin Porter Boguski, the large ad agency.
Yep.
Yes. He left that company, and this is what he left to start.
So Alex has an amazing investment practice, Batshit Crazy Ventures. He is one of the founders of Brinsuka, and he's an investor and advisor in many amazing companies, including Lyft. So Alex is very involved with Brinsuka, but I'd be reticent to say that this is what he does. He's our executive chairman and points north for us, and then we push hard.
Can you give me an example or two of what sort of a normal civilian making a Brinsuka ad, what someone has done, what someone's advertised?
So this is my favorite use case. So you build these things, and you're going through the lean canvas, and you're doing all of these things that we all do in tech, trying to figure out where this thing that we're making and passionate about is going to go, right? But then people shake it in all sorts of unexpected ways. My favorite use case today of Brinsuka is a hipster in New York. His name is Glenn Sabo, who launched a Brinsuka campaign around Valentine's to get a date. So he basically went in with $50 and targeted girls in his neighborhood who like to party. And he made this awesome video. You can go to, I think it's dateglenn.com. And you can see Glenn's video of him just saying, hey, ladies, I'm awesome. You're awesome. Let's be awesome together, basically. And how should I put this politely? Let's just say that that campaign saw at least one full conversion. So the idea, you know, that somebody can just, on a lark, make a video, because we're all making a huge amount of videos. And the real shame is those videos aren't really doing much. We put them on YouTube. We're really proud of them. And we think they're going to be the next great viral video or going to have this massive effect. But they generally sit at around 40 views, if that. But the idea that Glenn can grab that video, put it on CNN.com, hyper-targeted to his neighborhood and to single women, we think that that's a pretty despondent use of the media machine, as it were. And we think that's fucking awesome. You literally can just log in with your Facebook account, cost you nothing. And just like Facebook ads, you go through a process. It takes about 2.5 minutes for our average user to launch a campaign. They just tell us who they want to target and where. It can be downtown Boulder, or it can be downtown Mazar-e-Sharif in Afghanistan. Works globally. Load up your video, see it go, and then you have this amazing, amazing dashboard that actually shows you the results in real time, actually shows you a heat map of where your video is playing, and you can zoom in down to the house where that video played. So if you wanted, we don't recommend this, but if you wanted to knock on the door and say, hey man, you just saw my video, you could do that.
And you could create a video about this dude's dog barking too much. And hey, could you muzzle your dog?
When you do that, let us know. I'd love to make a use case on that because we think weird use cases are pretty cool.
So as a product manager, what does your job entail?
As a product owner? As a product owner, I live mostly in data. So I see how the product is performing at various levels, but probably the coolest thing that a product owner gets to do once the product is out there is measure how people are interacting with that product firsthand, identifying points of friction or points of opportunity to just make the product better. Then I align it across cross-functional teams. So I'm aligning the marketing team and the sales team, the media team, and of course the development teams, which is not bad for somebody who went to school to study poetry at the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics.
A Boulderite through and through.
All the way, man.
What were you doing before Brandzuka?
I started my first tech company when I was 24. Ran that for 10 years. We exited. Took some time off. I think it's really common among first-time entrepreneurs between their first thing and what comes next to get just in the doldrums and kind of really depressed. You know, you're operating at such a high level of energy and adrenaline for an extended period, and then you take that away from you and you think, oh shit, here I am retired at 30, and you can't but just like feel not great. So it took me a little bit to get my wheels out from under me, and then Alex called us up one day and said, hey, got this fucking idea. And I'm like, let's do that. And I've never worked harder in my life, period, ever. I just keep finding like new levels, but I've never been happier in my life. You know, this community just has a way of taking an elevating joy within you. So I wake up every day with a big smile, corner to corner, which is pretty cool.
As someone who has grown up in Boulder, have you lived here throughout? Have you ever moved away and come back?
I did. Just like almost every member of my high school class, I thought it'd be pretty neat to graduate high school and move away. That took about a year before I was like, what the fuck am I doing in Florida? And why does Florida even exist? So I came back, and after college, I left for a little while, came back again. They call it Niwot's curse that always brings you back. And, you know, that all sounds pretty good. But I don't know. I think just Boulder has a way of ruining the rest of the world for you.
That's an interesting way to put it. As somebody who grew up in Miami and moved to Boulder to transfer to CU a long time ago.
Yeah.
And has been here more or less ever since, I can mostly relate to your sentiments about Florida. So is there anything in particular you've noticed about the development of the tech scene here in Boulder?
Well, that there is one, for one. You know, it's come such a long way so incredibly quickly. And what I think is the root cause of it is kind of the cultural dynamics of Boulder generally. So number one, just geographically, we're pretty well concentrated, right? So I don't think a day goes by that I don't have at least 5 unscheduled meetings. And by that I mean I'm somewhere and I just run into somebody that I haven't seen in a couple of weeks, and we just end up having coffee and exchanging ideas. So it's this incredible laboratory of just innovation that we get to have in a really particular way. I also get to spend a lot of time out in Silicon Valley. And it's like, you know, every meeting out there, it's like 2 hours of traffic. You get there and then you just have to head back. So I think there's a lot of things about Boulder that facilitate the development of community. There's also a cultural ethos that it's not within Boulder. I wouldn't say it's unique to the startup community, but it is a unique culture within startup communities in general. It's this tide lifts all boats mentality, right? I have friends who work tech in New York, and it's like everybody's having a knife fight in a phone booth. over here, I can have companies that are competitive with my company, and we still go out and have beers and are exchanging information that, you know, or lawyers would be like, what are you, just shut your mouth. But we just are huge believers in collaboration, and it allows us to have incredible outcomes.
The community aspect of the tech and startup community here in Boulder is something that's been sort of the common thread through all of the interviews that I've done so far. And it's really interesting to me, and I'm curious if you have any thoughts about why that is.
It's a very small community, right? And it's nice to think that it's all this kumbaya, right? But it is really, really important in the way we do it, because there's a huge aspect of it, which is self-policing. So hucksters or people who are not aligned culturally within Boulder don't last very long in Boulder. For every five people that I see coming into the community, I see two or three who are kind of organically rejected by the community. And it allows us to keep a high level of focus and congruence around that community. It's a little tribalistic. And I do know that people from outside the community are like, oh, that Boulder Kool-Aid or that Boulder tribalism thing. It's a little kind of weird. Maybe, I don't know. What I do know is that one of the coolest things that I get to do is just be available. And I know that we all take that extremely seriously here. You can send an email to literally anybody in the community, and they will respond, and likely they will give you some of their time for a coffee or a meeting or whatever. Because it, you know, it number one helps the community, and it number two, it helps us integrate talent within the community. One of my least favorite things that sometimes happens is when people call me up for that meeting and I make that time and they fucking have nothing to say. They're just kind of trying to collect introductions and don't have much of a clear agenda. Those people don't last long in Boulder, I find.
And you would say that most of your interactions, though, are not like that. They're positive. They're
exactly
back
right.
And forth.
Yeah.
And there's some collaboration and
yeah.
Sharing. I think that's really interesting. And my theory is that it's sort of the new iteration of Boulder's kind of historical hippie ethos. When I moved here,
I think it goes well beyond that, man. I mean, think about the West. Think about how these towns were started. It was just a dude with his backpack. If he was balling, he had a wagon.
Right.
And no one was going to survive out here but with the help of others. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one of the amazing things about the American West and about the culture that the American West has elicited within communities. And yeah, I think that aligned nicely to the 70s and the hippies and the first of those natural food startups. I mean, I was fed the story from middle school and high school about, you know, the Celestial Seasonings guys having a van that broke down and just needing to make some money to fix a van so they could make it out to Santa Cruz. So they just went up to Chautauqua and started picking herbs right off the side of the hill and putting them in tea bags and selling those. And eventually they had enough money to fix the van, buy a whole fleet of vans. And they were like, oh man, this is kind of cool. And it's amazing here.
Going back to Brandzuka, what do you see as the future for what you guys are doing? It sounds very interesting. I'm very curious to check out the site and
yeah.
Get a better idea of how it works. But part of me, maybe the paranoid part of me, thinks like, whoa, is this the sort of thing that's going to lead to, I think of the film Minority Report, when Tom Cruise is walking through the mall and all the advertisements are talking directly to him.
That's absolutely coming in your lifetime, in my lifetime. And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily scary. But we're writing one very simple, I wouldn't call it a thesis because it's reality. When you look at communication throughout history, communication always finds a way to move through the most efficient and less constricting channel. That's why papyrus was a revolution, and then paper was a revolution, and then the Pony Express, and then the telegraph, and then the telephone. Media gets richer and communication gets faster. There is no doubt that the past let's say, for the past 100 years, we've built this massive industry around advertising. What has been not so great about that, in my opinion, has been that generally, unless you have these giant pockets, you cannot access the firepower of those channels of communication in the same way as a giant brand. That's why I think Facebook ads is so amazing, right? Because it allows you, it allows me, it literally allows anybody to easily advertise and easily move their content in a truly democratized way. And I think the future is that. And I think Boulder had a giant part in that. Generally, it's called programmatic advertising. Programmatic advertising is the fancy term for the real-time bidding, selling, and placement of ad units on digital channels that has generally been online on like Facebook, Google AdWords, and online websites. It's in fact the largest securities market ever devised by man. More trades happen in programmatic in a day than the New York Stock Exchange trades in a year. It is just a huge amount of information back and forth. Generally speaking, that channel has been controlled by giant media agencies. Look up Starcom MediaVest. And they're handling billions of dollars for brands like P&G, etc. We see a future where that pipe is available to each and every one of us, and where we can compete on the same equal footing as those large brands. Because at the end of the day, here's the hack. You want the hack?
Mm-hmm.
Here's how it happens. You go to the front page of CNN.com or you turn on that TV. Do you know how much a brand paid for that specific commercial for you to see that? Less than a penny.
Less than a penny?
Less than a penny. Yeah, that's actually what they pay. But what happens is you have these gatekeepers, which are the media agencies, who say, well, yeah, it's less than a penny per impression, but we cannot do anything for you unless you give us, a small agency would say, $250,000. The other day I was with the CEO of a large media agency in New York, and he's asking me about Brinsuch, and I'm telling him about Brinsuch, and I'm like, you know, it's for small budgets, small advertisers. And he was still just not getting it. It's like I was speaking Martian to him. And finally, I just had the gall to ask him. I'm like, I'm sorry, maybe we just have different terms here. What's a small budget to you? And he turned to his executive team that was in the room, and then he looked at me and he said seven. And I'm like, seven what? He's like, 7 million. That's borderline we would even work for that little money. So, you know, who doesn't have $7 million to spend in online advertising? Fucking everybody. No one has $7 million.
Right.
Right? It's just absolutely crazy. So we're removing that media agency. We think that's great for P&G, and we think that's great for Pepsi, maybe. I don't know. I don't really care. That's not really that exciting to me. What we think is pretty cool is if you remove that piece of barrier and the coffee shop or that tiny little startup in the basement at Boomtown or whomever has the same reach and access as Pepsi and can actually beat Pepsi at their own game. We think that's fucking great, because what it allows us to do is it allows us to literally rebalance the media stack and the types of messaging that everybody's interacting with. So the idea here, the idea with programmatic, is that you can be much more precise in who you're talking to. And when brand messaging has a level of relevancy to the audience, the outcomes are much different. So for example, I love skiing. Fucking, it's hard to get me in the office during the ski season because I just want to be up there. You put a video in front of me that has skis on them on CNN or on TV, and I'm just hooked because that's what I like, and those are the brands and the equipment that I have an interest in. You know what I keep seeing online these days? It's the Tampax ad in Spanish. Fucking Tampax ad in Spanish. I don't care what language you put the Tampax ad in front of me, there's just something irrelevant about that brand conversation. And it breaks my experience online, right? Mm-hmm. Or on TV, and it's a pain in my ass. And then I want to put on an ad blocker. I take this kind of outsized view on ad blockers. People are like, but ad blockers. And I think ad blockers are fucking great. Think about that. Somebody in media and advertising is telling you they think ad blockers are great. why are ad blockers great? I think ad blockers are great because they're a symptom. They're not the disease. Publishers and media have tried to monetize in such a way that it's breaking the experience of their user, of the people they're trying to serve, to such an extent that people are researching and downloading and putting in ad blockers. That's bad. That's really bad. Imagine going out to Pearl Street and outside every store, there's somebody just throwing flyers in your face. You wouldn't go to Pearl Street anymore.
Right.
Right. So something is broken with the online experience. And I think what's broken with the online experience really is diversity and relevancy. So I think platforms like Facebook and Google and certainly Brandsuka on TV and programmatic are helping reshift that. And it can't last very long, but it's going to have to shift because it's a huge threat for the publishers. We also have some fault ourselves. 15 years ago, we all kind of made a deal that we weren't going to pay for anything. We wanted content and we wanted it free. So what's CNN to do? They have to send somebody to Africa and they have to have a reporter in the White House. And we don't want to pay for that content. They're going to sell advertising.
So Brandzuka just allows them to target that advertising to make it more relevant so it feels less invasive to the end user, or the target of that advertising.
That's exactly right.
And it seems like it also frees up the content creators to make more interesting content because they don't have to water it down to that least common denominator.
Certainly that, but then the third thing is just raw access. When I came here and I told you that for $35 you could put your video on primetime and have it viewed thousands and thousands of times in a very targeted way, you thought, the fuck is this kid and what is he smoking? It just doesn't work that way. We are literally giving anybody access to the crown jewel in the advertising stack, and that's the TV screen.
And is there a particular, and again, I'm thinking more in terms of just the individual who has a message that they want to get out, something that they want to promote or advertise. Are these people coming from all walks of life or are there different you're identifying?
Literally. Go to the Brandsuka channel on YouTube. Our marketing team does a great job in spotlighting folks who are using Brandsuka, and we literally see everything. We see local coffee shops. We see yoga teachers placing ads in the same way that larger brands are doing. So we're really delivering on what was that intent, to democratize and give access to a wide range of use cases. We have clients in 110 countries. So people are actively using Brandsuka across 110 countries. And we've served videos on behalf of advertisers in, I think, every country except North Korea at this point. Now, I don't know what's going on with the North Korean internet. I think somebody maybe just forgot to plug something in. But yeah, it's amazing the depth to which we're able to reach one another.
So where do you see Brandsuka in 5 years from now?
I have no idea, man. It's a juggernaut tied to a rocket ship. And every time I do a forecast, it just gets blown out. So we're just going to ride it. And we're just going to keep being passionate about what we do. And we think that's enough to see us to some pretty cool places.
All right. Thanks for coming, Achilles.
Hey, thanks, man.
That was Achilles LeGrave, founder and CEO of Brandsuka. Find out more at brandsuka.com. Episode number 10 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week, new to Boulder track sponsor, Downtown Boulder Partnership. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Matter, Zayo, Google, and Boulder Engineering Studio. We're also presented by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio,
and to KGNU Community Radio for the recording gear. Our intro music is by Echodeck, that's E-C-C-O-D-E-K. Hear more at echodeck.com. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, and comments are welcome. Reach me at joel@thevibrarian.co. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.